will give a news conference at the White House. This comes 2 days after the capture of Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein and 1 day after U.S. officials announced that capture in public, showed dramatic videotapes of Saddam Hussein in custody. This news conference is, to be sure, a comparatively rare event. The president often answers questions at photo opportunities, but less often in full-blown news conferences like this. But this has been a weekend of momentous news, of importance to Iraqis, to Americans, and without a doubt to the president himself. As we wait for the president to begin speaking, we are joined by NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson. Hi, Mara.
Hi, Steve.
And I have to ask about the political ramifications of this. People were asking if the trouble in Iraq, the continued conflict in Iraq, was going to drag down President Bush's presidency, and now you have this situation.
Well, this is definitely good news, and I think politically you could say that at least in the short term, it gives a boost to the president. He has been wanting to be able to point to some news from Iraq that looks like good news, like we're making some progress, as opposed to the continued killings of American soldiers and Iraqis who are helping the occupation effort, Iraqi policemen. This is a great opportunity for him to do that. Saddam Hussein is the biggest symbol you can get of making some progress there. As long as he was not apprehended or killed, all the Democrats who feel that Bush has bungled the occupation, the Democratic candidates, could say, in addition to all of the complaints about the policy, and he can't even find Saddam Hussein. Well, he did.
You've been reporting on what the Democrats are saying and how they're modulating what they're saying in the light of this event.
I think for the moment, this makes life a little bit more complicated for the Democratic presidential candidates who have opposed the war and been most critical of George Bush. For the moment, I think it helps candidates like Joe Lieberman or Dick Gephardt, who've been fairly consistent in their support for the war, even though they have been fierce critics of the way the president has handled its aftermath. Now, I don't think this is going to change the dynamic of the Democratic nominating contest. I think Howard Dean is still the front runner. Howard Dean, in an appropriate statement yesterday, congratulated the U.S. military, congratulated the president. He said, I think the president deserves a day of celebration. But in his statement that he released yesterday, he said, this is a great opportunity to internationalize the occupation. In other words, they're not going to cease and desist in their criticisms because this one capture of one man does not mean that everything has changed in Iraq.
Howard Dean was also questioned by Joe Lieberman, among other Democratic presidential candidates, who essentially said, look, if we'd done what Howard Dean wanted, Saddam Hussein would still be in power.
Right. That is a debate that is going on in the Democratic primary contest. This puts a sharper focus on that debate. This isn't the first time that Lieberman has raised that question about Dean. Dean's policy was containment. He said that he thought it would have been better if we didn't go to war against Iraq, Saddam Hussein could have been contained. Certainly, this, if he becomes the nominee, this is a major question he's going to face from President Bush and the Republicans, which is, you favored a policy that would have left Saddam Hussein in power. How can you justify that? And, you know, the difference in the Democratic contest right now is that Joe Lieberman is so far back in the pack, I don't think he poses a major threat to Howard Dean, but he is asking that question, and Dean is going to have to answer it.
Mara Liasson, I have to wonder if this news seems as good as it might have been had it come 6 months ago, 7 months ago, if Saddam Hussein had been captured immediately after the end of what the president described as major conflict in Iraq. You have to wonder if the dynamics would be different, if the impact would be different than it is today when people know there is a conflict that will continue.
Well, I think that if Saddam Hussein had been captured right away or killed, and the situation had continued to deteriorate the way it has now, I don't know if we would have been in a different situation today. If his capture, as many American officials hope, provides this incredible deflation of the resistance energy there, then yes, it would make a huge difference. We don't know the answer to that question now. What we're hearing from military commanders over there is don't expect that attacks on American forces or Iraqi helpers, Iraqi policemen, people who are aiding in the occupation effort, are going to cease and desist. It might even get worse. We don't know to what extent Saddam himself was directing this resistance. It might be that he was completely disconnected and the resistance was based a lot more on nationalism and pride in Islam and anger at the occupation than it was in some kind of loyalty to him and desire to return him to power.
I want to talk about that some more, but first I want to mention that you're listening to special coverage from NPR News. We're waiting on a presidential press conference, which we're now expecting to begin within the next 4 to 5 minutes. And joining us now to talk a little bit more about the situation in Iraq is NPR's Ted Clark, a senior foreign desk editor. I'll get it right eventually, Ted.
Right.
Good morning. I got Good your morning. Name right anyway, didn't I?
Hi.
So we have this situation in Iraq. Saddam Hussein has been captured. What does that mean for the Iraqi resistance and the situation on the ground?
Well, that's one of the most interesting questions right now. Excuse me. If the resistance continues, as Mara suggested it might, then it will become clearer that the resistance fighters are not fighting for Saddam Hussein so much as they're fighting against the United States, as Senator Jay Rockefeller put it. So, and even today as we speak, there were two car bombings in Baghdad led to the deaths of 8 Iraqi police. So the immediate indications are that the resistance is continuing.
And who's still fighting?
Well, that's the question. That, of course, is the question. There are indications that many of the fighters are, in fact, nationalists. They're fighting against the occupation and for Iraq. Many analysts believe that these are particularly Sunni fighters who are concerned that in the new Iraq, Sunnis will be in a minority and the Shiites will be a majority, and they're worried about life under a Shiite majority, which, by the way, is one reason why the new constitution has to build in strong protections for the Sunni minority to help reassure them that it would be all right to go ahead with a new constitution and new Iraq. One last group who might well still be at large and fighting in Iraq would be the foreign fighters who have come in, some with ties to Al-Qaeda, some with Islamic motivations to attack the United States where it's most vulnerable.
NPR's Ivan Watson, who's in Iraq now, raised an interesting question yesterday, Ted, when he raised the question of whether some Iraqis might be affected in a way that the United States would not like by these images of Saddam Hussein, an obviously defeated man, bedraggled, long hair, bearded, being handled by an American doctor. It's clear that he was defeated, but Ivan raised the possibility that some Iraqis might also find that embarrassing, humiliating, that their nationalism was offended by the United States.
Yes, I think that's quite possible. This was a blow to the pride of the Arab nation, even if you didn't like Saddam Hussein, to see the president of one of the most powerful Arab states brought so low. This has led to conspiracy theories that he was made to look more disheveled than he really was by the Americans who captured him, most of which are not very plausible. But it has taken a blow, and it may increase resentment against the U.S. occupation even more than currently is the case. Which would be bad news, but we'll just have to see.
We're just over a minute from a presidential press conference, which we will cover live here on NPR. You are listening to special coverage from NPR News. And Ted Clark, in that moment that we have left, I guess it's worth asking what the immediate dangers are now. You mentioned that there have been a couple of car bombings already today. What are U.S. officials saying that they have to be looking out for now that Saddam Hussein is in custody?
Well, they're looking out for further attacks. Apparently, one of the first things U.S. interrogators asked Saddam Hussein is what, if anything, he could tell them about immediate attacks. That information is critical. It's a high priority because it gets cold very quickly. Any information he has and he offers today may not be useful 3 or 4 days from now.
And there was a lot of speculation that Saddam Hussein probably wouldn't be the one who would know which attacks were coming anyway.
So it seems. He was quite isolated.
In a rat hole, as they said. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep with Ted Clark and Mara Liasson. We are looking at a televised image of a lectern at the White House, where we're expecting President Bush any moment to step out. Here he is, stepping to the podium, and we will carry his remarks live.
Coming to this, the last press conference of the year 2003. Before I begin, I do want to talk a little bit about a meeting I just attended. Rind al-Rahim is here. She's the representative from the Iraqi government, the interim government to the United States, and as well as the Dr. Kudair Abbas, who is the interim minister of health. We just had an interesting discussion in the Roosevelt Room about the health needs of Iraq. about the future of the healthcare system in Iraq, and we were joined by doctors, Iraqi doctors, who were anxious to work with their fellow counterparts here in America to enhance educational opportunities and to get caught up on the latest technologies in healthcare. The thing that struck me about the meeting was this kind of joy that they expressed about being free. It was a touching meeting, and I want to thank you all for coming. Doc, I want to thank you for your good work. We are making progress together in improving the lives of your citizens with better health care. Immunization rates are up. People are getting better health care. He was reminding me, I think the budget of the Saddam Hussein's government for health was like $16 million, less than a dollar per person. And, of course, we're spending a lot more than that now on health care in Iraq. But it was a very meaningful meeting. I want to thank you. Please thank those good docs for being there. This weekend's capture of Saddam Hussein was a great moment for the people of Iraq. Iraqi citizens have lost a source of fear, and they can now focus with confidence on the task of creating a hopeful and self-governing nation. The capture of the former dictator, the enemies of a free Iraq have lost their leader, and they've lost any hope of regaining power. The nightmare of the Ba'athist tyranny is finally over. The terrorists in Iraq remain dangerous. The work of our coalition remains difficult and will require further sacrifice. Yet it should now be clear to all, Iraq is on the path to freedom. And a free Iraq will serve the peace and security of America and the world. This achievement comes at the end of an extraordinary year for our country, abroad and here at home. In 2003, we have become a safer, more prosperous, and better nation. Our armed forces, joined by our allies, continue on the offensive against terrorist enemies around the world. We continue our systematic hunt for al-Qaeda leaders and al-Qaeda cells in many countries. I want to thank the Congress for standing behind our military with needed resources and for giving vital support to the work of reconstruction in Iraq and Afghanistan. America's economy is growing at a robust pace and beginning to generate new jobs for America, American workers. I want to thank the Congress for passing my jobs and growth package, which is doing just what it was supposed to do. And we will continue pursuing a pro-growth agenda next year. In this year of accomplishment, we passed Medicare reform. American seniors can now look forward to prescription drug coverage, more choices, and a stronger Medicare system. I want to thank the Congress for coming together to get the job done. This session of Congress has also produced vital action on homeland security, healthy forests, global AIDS relief, housing assistance, adoption, Amber Alerts to capture kidnappers and rescue their victims, and protection of children from partial birth abortion. Members of both political parties can take pride in the important goals we have met by working together. We have a great deal to show for our efforts in 2003. Yet unfinished business remains. A majority in both houses support a comprehensive energy bill, as well as reforms in class action to curtail junk lawsuits. The House also passed a medical liability reform bill. It is stuck in the Senate. These measures were blocked, and they are needed. They are needed to help America become more prosperous and their help needed to help America be a better place. When the House and Senate return in January, there'll be more to do, and I look forward to working with them. I've got a few ideas about what we can do together in the year 2004. As we end 2003, we have a lot to be thankful for, especially for the fine men and women who wear our country's uniform and who will spend their holidays far from home. I hope all Americans will keep these brave men and women in their thoughts and prayers during this blessed season. I will take some questions, starting with AP men.
You're listening to special coverage from NPR News.
Thank you, Mr. President. What's the United States going to do with Saddam Hussein after questioning him? Will he be turned over to Iraqis for trial? And based on what you know now about mass executions and hundreds of thousands of graves, do you think that execution should be an option?
He will be detained. We will work with the Iraqis to develop a way to try him that will stand international scrutiny, I guess is the best way to put it. I shared my sentiments today with Prime Minister Martin of Canada. He asked me about Saddam Hussein and his trial. I said, look, the Iraqis need to be very much involved. He was the person that... They were the people that were brutalized by this man. He murdered them. He gassed them. He tortured them. He had rape rooms. And they need to be very much involved in the process. And we'll work with the Iraqis to develop a process. And of course we want it to be fair. And of course we want the world to say, well, this, you know, you got a fair trial. Because whatever justice is meted out needs to stand international scrutiny. I've got my own personal views of how he ought to be treated, but I'm not an Iraqi citizen. It's going to be up to the Iraqis to make those decisions. Yeah, I said I have my own personal views, and this is a brutal dictator. He's a person who killed a lot of people, and but my views, my personal views, aren't important in this matter. What matters is the views of the Iraqi citizens. We need to work, of course, with them to develop a system that is fair, where he will be put on trial and will be brought to justice. The justice he didn't, by the way, afford any of his own fellow citizens. Steve.
Thank you, sir. Will Saddam's capture accelerate the timetable for pulling U.S. troops out and increase the likelihood of getting more foreign troops involved?
We will stay the course until the job is done, Steve. And the temptation is to try to get the president or somebody to put a timetable on the definition of getting the job done. We're just going to stay the course, and it's very important for the Iraqi people to know that. I've expressed that to Rand. I've told that to the Iraqi citizens with whom I have met on a regular basis. I tell them two things. One, you can count on America remaining until the job is done. It's important for them to hear that, because there will probably be some that will continue to test our will. You know, they'll try to kill in hopes that we will flee. And the citizens of Iraq need to know we will stay the course. I also tell them that now is a chance to seize the opportunity and show the world that which this government believes, and that is you're plenty capable of governing yourself. The level of the troops in Iraq will depend upon the security situation on the ground, and that those decisions be made by our commanders. I have not changed my philosophy of how a president ought to act during wartime, which is to set the strategy, lay out the goals, and empower the military people, both civilian and uniform, to make the decisions necessary to achieve the objective. And they will make those recommendations about troop levels and what is necessary to... Go ahead, you got a follow-up? This is part of the holiday spirit to give you a follow-up.
Opportunity to get more foreign troops.
Well, listen, we're constantly working to get foreign countries involved, but I want to remind you we've got over 60 nations involved now. When you hear me talk about
our efforts. I'm talking about the efforts of a lot of countries. We've got a large coalition involved. And, of course, we will accept the willingness of nations to put troops on the ground. And we're continuing to work, whether it be troops on the ground or construction contracts or loans. We're constantly reaching out to more nations to get them involved in the process. And after all, there is a reason why nations should be involved in the process. A secure and free Iraq is in their national interest. A free country, a peaceful country in the heart of the Middle East, is in the interest of all nations. This is a transforming event. The emergence of a peaceful Iraq will transform the region in a positive way that will make it more likely that the world is peaceful. And if we're constantly talking about that message and encouraging people to participate. Gregory.
Mr. President, good morning. When Saddam emerged from his hole on Saturday, he told a U.S. soldier that he was willing to negotiate. Might there be room for negotiation, perhaps in exchange for a public statement to the Iraqi people that may serve your interests? And secondly, this soldier also said to Saddam, reportedly, that President Bush sends his greetings. You say this is not personal, but you've also pointed out this was a man who tried to murder your father. Yeah. What is your greeting to him today?
Good riddance. The world is better off without you, Mr. Saddam Hussein. I find it very interesting that when the heat got on, you dug yourself a hole and you crawled in it. And our brave troops, combined with good intelligence, found you. And you'll be brought to justice, something you did not afford the people you brutalized in your own country. And what was the first part of the question?
I know you scoffed at the idea of negotiation. What I'm asking.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, how do you know I scoffed at it? Laughing does not mean scoffing.
No,
but
I'm just saying. Well, there were others who were scoffing. Yeah. I mean, if you were to do something that you might view as constructive, like making a public statement.
Dave, it's way too early to tell. First of all, I don't trust Saddam Hussein. I don't believe he'll tell the truth. He didn't tell the truth for over a decade. I just can't believe he's going to change his ways just because he happens to be captured. And so I don't think we ought to trust his word. I think what needs to happen is he needs to be brought to justice. And the Iraqi citizens need to be very much involved in the development of a system that brings him to justice. And there needs to be a public trial. And all the atrocities need to come out. And justice needs to be delivered, and I'm confident it will be done in a fair way. Terry.
Mr. President, do you believe that the capture of Saddam Hussein will bridge some of the differences, the bitter differences that have arisen in the world over Iraq? Or do you believe that the Iraq war marks a dividing line, perhaps a long-term dividing line, between those countries which fought to topple Saddam Hussein and those which did not?
Interesting question. I think that, first of all, I want to repeat, there's over 60 nations involved in the reconstruction of Iraq now, so there's a lot of people are participating, and we're out working to encourage others to participate. What you're talking about is France and Germany, the truth be known. I might clarify your question to me. Look, France and Germany, I have reached out to them. They've reached out to us. It's in our national interest. We work together. A whole and united and peaceful Europe is in this country's interest. And we look forward to working with them on a wide range of issues, whether it be intelligence sharing or in the reconstruction of Afghanistan. I want to remind you, Germany has committed troops to Afghanistan. It's in this country's interest that Afghanistan emerge as a peaceful country. Germany is contributing to that effort. There's a lot of areas where we do work together. We had a disagreement on this issue about Saddam Hussein and his threat. I obviously felt like September the 11th changed the equation to the point where we needed to deal with emerging threats and deal with them in a way that would make America more secure. And they didn't see that. They didn't agree with that point of view. I can understand that. And you know, we are now reaching out to them, by the way. Jim Baker, as you know, will be going to both those two countries tomorrow, I think it is, to encourage them to work with us on debt relief, all aimed at encouraging the development of a free and peaceful Iraq. So, I don't agree that this is a dividing line. I think this is a disagreement on this particular issue, and I know that we can work together on a variety of other issues. And I'll cite one example: Iran. I was most pleased that the French and Germans, as well as the Brits, delivered a very strong message to the Iranian government about the development of a nuclear weapon. It was a message that we agree with, and that is, don't do so. Otherwise, there will be, international consequences at the United Nations. And it was a very important message to be delivered. We agreed on that. And working together, it made it easier for us to send that message. John, working my way across here.
Thank you, Mr. President. The capture of Saddam Hussein is something that has been universally applauded, but there still remain a lot of lingering questions about the post-war phase of Iraq. This administration has stated that it would like to see an interim Iraqi government stood up by next June, the ability to be able to begin to draw down troops if that's possible. Even a political novice would have to say, well, there appears to be some political component to all of this, some way of making real progress ahead of the November elections.
Yeah, well, people can read whatever they want to read into it. My job is to keep America secure. That's my job. I've got a solemn duty to do everything I can to protect the American people. I will never forget the lessons of September the 11th, 2001. Terrorists attacked us. They killed thousands of our fellow citizens, and it could happen again, and therefore I will deal with threats. Threats that that are emerging and real. We gave Saddam Hussein plenty of time to heed the demands of the world. And he chose defiance. He did. He said, forget it. I don't care what the United Nations has said over a decade. I don't care about all the resolutions passed. He chose defiance. We acted. And I acted because, I repeat, I have a duty to protect this country. And I will continue to protect the country so long as I'm the President of the United States. A free and peaceful Iraq is part of protecting America. Because I told you before, and I truly believe this will be a transforming event in a part of the world that where hatred and violence are bred, a part of a world that breeds resentment. And, we're going to an election. There's going to be plenty of time for politics. People can debate all they want. I'm going to do my job. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do my job to make this country safer. I believe we're making good progress toward that objective angle.
Thank you, Mr. President. Until recently, a growing number of Americans and a couple of presidential candidates were saying it might be time to think about getting out of Iraq. I know you've said that you intend to stay the course, but I wonder what your view is of such sentiments, how concerned you are about that view among the public, and whether or not you think Saddam's capture should change people's thinking.
Yeah. I think Saddam's capture should make it clear to the people of Iraq, most importantly, that he's through. That people can no longer have to hold back their sentiments and their feelings toward living in a free society because he might reemerge. That's the most important thing about this capture, is that he can no longer provide an excuse for some who were afraid to act. And I can understand why people would be afraid to act in Iraq, afraid that Saddam might come back. After all, he's a torturer and a killer. I met with a doctor today. Guy took me aside and he said, I want to thank you. My dad was murdered by Saddam Hussein. A lot of people share that sentiment, by the way, because it's happened to them. And you can understand why people feared him. After all, he stayed in power by fear, by ruling through fear. And, Jim, I will make the decisions based upon what I think is right to achieve
the objectives I've outlined, the objectives I outlined prior to freeing Iraq from Saddam Hussein, and that is to make this country more secure and the world more free. And I'm confident people aren't going to agree with every decision I make. I understand that, and I don't expect people to agree with every decision I make, but I'm, regardless of whether they do or not, I'm going to continue making the decisions in the way that I think is best for the country. And that's there'll be ample time to have a debate about whether or not it's the right strategy. I look forward to the debate. I look forward to making my case to the American people about why America is more secure today based upon the decisions I've made. But the, as I said, there's ample time for politics. I know you all want to jump the gun. It makes exciting news. It makes the stories more interesting and more vital from your perspective. Let me just, so that we can get this straight early in the process, I take my job seriously. I will do my job. And I look forward to the political debate later on. And so I'm confident during the numerous press conferences I'll be having next year, just like I had this year, that you'll be asking me questions about this political statement or that political statement. And my answer is going to be the same until I'm ready to engage, and that is, let me just tell you what the strategy is of this administration. Forget politics. The strategy that I've outlined in order to do my solemn duty. And my duty is not only to keep the country more secure, but more prosperous and a better country as well. Dana.
Thank you, Mr. President.
This is special coverage from NPR News.
I'm quite sharp on Wall Street, increasingly worried about the deficit. Sorry. And Wall Street's increasingly worried about the deficit. Will you have a specific plan for reducing the deficit, or will economic growth alone take care of the problem?
Yeah. No, I appreciate that question. Josh Bolton laid out a plan that will shrink the deficit in half in a five-year period, and that's based upon reasonable growth assumptions. And it's a plan that depends upon Congress to continue to hold the line on spending. We have a deficit because of, one, a recession, two, a war. I want to remind you all that in order to fight and win the war, it requires a expenditure of money that is commensurate with keeping a promise to our troops to make sure that they're well-paid, well-trained, well-equipped. And so we've spent a lot on defense budgets in order to win the war. We've also spent a lot of money to secure our homeland. And then, of course, there was a tax relief, a stimulus package, which was necessary to make sure that we had ample revenues coming into the Treasury in the first place. See, without the tax relief package, there would have been a deficit, but there wouldn't have been the kick to our economy that occurred as a result of the tax relief. And the tax relief is working. When the Senate finishes its work on the appropriations bill, we will have held discretionary spending to 4%, and that's what we agreed to with the Congress during the budget negotiations. I want to remind you of a fact that I think you'll find interesting, or maybe you won't find interesting, but I find it interesting, that non-military, non-homeland security discretionary spending was at 15% increase from year to year, was at 15% prior to our arrival. Then it was at 6%, 5%, and 3%. So we're working with Congress to hold the line on spending. And we do have a plan to cut the deficit in half. Sanger.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, it's been 9 months now, and still there is relatively little evidence of WMD in Iraq. In retrospect, as you think back over the year, would you have been better to make more of the argument that you've made in recent times that democratization in the Middle East was the reason to go to war rather than the WMD? Mm-hmm. And since the CIA has been telling you that North Korea does have two or more weapons, what lesson should Kim Jong-il draw from the capture of Saddam Hussein?
Very deft at weaving in two questions there. He,
Here's what I took away from September the 11th, 2001. That any time the president sees a gathering threat to the United States, we must deal with it. We can't pick or choose like we used to could in the past. In the old days, oceans protected us from harm's way, and a president could stand back and say, well, maybe this gathering threat is an issue, maybe it's not. After September the 11th, that complacency, I guess it may be the right word, no longer is relevant. And therefore, I began to assess threats. And the threat of Saddam Hussein was a unique threat in this sense. The world recognized he was a threat for 12 years and 17 resolutions, I think it is. I believe it was 17 resolutions. For the resolution counter, give me a hand here. 17 resolutions. And he ignored them. He just treated the UN as an empty debating society, as if their resolutions meant nothing. This is a person who is... used chemical weapons before, which indicated to me he was a threat. He invaded his neighbors before. This is a person who was defiant. He's a deceiver, and he was a murderer in his own country. He was a threat. And so I went to the United Nations, as you recall, September the 12th, 2002, and said to the United Nations, let's work together to disarm this man. You recognized he had arms. We recognize he's got arms. Let's disarm him. And 1441 came about. It's when the world, the spoken through the United Nations Security Council with one voice, that in a unanimous voice, said, disarm or there will be serious consequences. In other words, they agreed that Saddam was a threat. And so we... moved to disarm him. In other words, there were serious consequences because he was defiant. Since then, David Kaye has reported back that he had weapons programs that would have put him in material breach of 1441. What that means, of course, is that had David Kaye been the lead inspector and had done the work that he did prior to our removal of Saddam, he would have reported back to the UN Security Council that Saddam was in fact in breach of the Council resolutions that were passed. Secondly, North Korea. One of the things, David, I think you've seen about our foreign policy is that I'm reluctant to use military power. It's the last choice. It's not our first choice. And in Iraq, there was a lot of diplomacy that took place before there was any military action. It was diplomacy prior to my arrival, diplomacy during my time here. And we tried all means and methodologies to achieve the objective, which was a more secure America, by using diplomatic means and persuasion. In North Korea, we're now in the process of using diplomatic means and persuasion to convince Kim Jong-il to get rid of his nuclear weapons program. And that's changed by altering the dynamics between the United States and North Korea this way by inviting other parties to be stakeholders in the process. And that's been successful thus far of convincing others that they have a stake in the process. It started in Crawford with Jiang Zemin, where we had a joint press conference, and he stepped out and said that we share a common goal, and that is a nuclear weapons-free peninsula. And as you know full well, that the relationship has evolved beyond just a statement, where we're now co-participants in the process of convincing Kim Jong-il to change his ways. And that's exactly where we are in the process. And I'm pleased with the progress we're making. And I hope, of course, he listens, Suzanne.
Mr. President, you have justified your policy in awarding prime Iraq contracts to members of the coalition authority because of their sacrifice with the war in Iraq. At the same time, your administration has indicated some room for negotiation. Your critics have called this retaliation and even blackmail. How do you respond to that, and how is this policy helpful in generating international support? Thank you.
There are over 60 nations involved in Iraq. Let's make sure everybody, let's all start from the same basis, if you don't mind. So there is international support. When you say there's over 60 nations involved in Iraq, that means that there's international support in Iraq. Again, I think you're talking about one or two countries, if I'm not mistaken. And we're reaching out to them, and we want them to participate. But the idea of spending taxpayers' money on contracts to firms that did not participate in the initial thrust is just something I wasn't going to do. And you know what? The American taxpayers understand that. They understand that clearly. That's not to say there's not other ways to participate, and we look forward to including them in the process. Big stretch.
Sorry. Mr. President, I know you said there'll be a time for politics, but you've also said you wanted to change the tone of Washington. Howard Dean recently seemed to muse aloud whether you had advanced knowledge of 9/11. Do you agree or disagree with the RNC that this kind of rhetoric borders on political hate speech?
Yeah. Look, there's time for politics. It's time for politics. It's an absurd insinuation.
In that case, sir, can I follow up on something unrelated? Tom Ridge recently seemed to discuss something you had talked about pre-9/11, and that is finding a way to legalize some of the illegal immigrants in this country. Could you clarify your policy, what it is short of blanket amnesty?
Yeah, well, first of all, I have constantly said that we need to have a immigration policy that helps match any willing employer with any willing employee. It makes sense that that policy go forward, and we're in the process of working that through now so I can make a recommendation to the Congress. Let me also clarify something. This administration is firmly against blanket amnesty. Let's see here. Judy.
Mr. President, do you have a sense yet of how involved Saddam Hussein was in planning and directing attacks on coalition troops? Should the American people expect that those attacks will now decrease, or should they be prepared that they might in the short term get worse?
To answer your question, the Defense Department will try to learn more from Saddam Hussein as time goes on. I believe there will be more violence because I believe there's holdovers of Saddam that are frustrated, and I believe there are foreign terrorists that cannot stand the thought of a free Iraq emerging in the Middle East. Now, this is a free Iraq will be a defeat for those who believe in violence and murder and mayhem, and they will try to resist us there. I do believe that there are going to be some people who are persuaded that since Saddam Hussein has been captured, that he will never return, and therefore they need to be a part of the emergence of a free Iraq and a free society, and it's going to be very important for the Iraqi authorities to reach out to those people and talk about a system that guarantees minority rights and a system which says that for some the future is bright, and I think when people begin to realize that, I would call them fence sitters. When people begin to realize that the Saddam regime is gone forever, and that the new society that will emerge will be a fair society that will protect people protect them based upon their own religious views, for example. Guarantee them rights is what I mean by protect. That it's more likely people will begin to sign on to the future of Iraq, and that's positive. It's a very helpful thing. But there will be terrorists, and they want to fight us. Remember, this is Iraq is a battle in the war on terror. The war on terror is being fought on many fronts, and some of them obviously more visible than others. Obviously, the Afghanistan front was a visible front. Iraq is a visible front. The Philippines, for example, is a front in the war on terror against Abu Sayyaf. And we've been fairly stealthy operations there to bring the leadership of Abu Sayyaf to justice. The war on terror encompasses more than just military action, of course, or the use of special force strike teams. Cutting off money is an important part of the war on terror. And so, Judy, it's very important for people to put this Iraq in a broader context about a war that will continue on. The reason I bring that up is that these the enemy, the terrorists, the killers, may continue to try to strike in Iraq. They think they may be able to defeat us there. Yesterday was a clear signal to them that they won't be able to. The other thing that's happening in Iraq that's positive, and I think this some of you your papers and broadcasts have picked this up, is that the intelligence that on the ground is getting better. It's getting richer. There's what they call actionable intelligence to which our military's responded on a quick basis is improving, and that's a very important development because, as you notice, when there's a hole in the ground and a person is able to crawl into it in a country the size of California, it means we're on a scavenger hunt for terror. And the best way to find these terrorists who hide in holes is to get people coming forth to describe the location of the hole, is to give clues and data. And we're on it. Our military is responding, and our intelligence services are doing very good work. And it's just a long process that requires patience and perseverance. And yesterday's arrest of this tyrant and killer was a good example of persistence and fine-tuning intelligence and gathering information and the hard work necessary to find people who are willing to hide in holes. Other stretch.
Thank you, Mr. President. At the outset, you said that you will pursue next year, the election year, a pro-growth agenda. Up until now, pro-growth in this administration has largely been synonymous with tax cuts.
Yeah.
Can you rule out the possibility of further tax cut proposals next year?
Stretch, it's a trick question. It's not very generous of you during the holiday season. First of all, I'm pleased with the economic growth that we've seen. I believe the economy's strong. I believe it's getting stronger. I'm pleased with the productivity numbers. I appreciate the fact that orders for durable goods are up. It looks like the manufacturing sector is strengthening. And what I've been referring to in terms of pro-growth or an energy bill, a good tort reform coming out of the Congress. I thought we had a chance to get some this year. It got stuck, unfortunately, in the Senate. My judgment, it was a mistake. It was a mistake not to let class action lawsuit reform go forward. It was a mistake not to get asbestos reform. Mistake not to get medical liability reform. All three of those measures, my judgment, obviously, are justifiable reforms at the federal level, which would have made a difference in terms of a pro-growth environment. We need more regulatory relief. We certainly need to send a signal to the capital markets that we're going to maintain spending discipline. Dana talked about the deficit. He also mentioned the strong dollar. And by the way, I didn't answer that part of your question. I'll get back there right now. Part of the economic policy of this administration is a strong dollar policy. We fully expect markets to set the dollar. We have a strong dollar policy, which is, in our judgment, good for the economic vitality of this country. And so we'll see, to answer your question. Ed.
Mr. President, you said earlier this morning that, trial, that all of Saddam's atrocities need to be brought out. He was in power more than 30 years, probably would make for a long rap sheet.
Well, you're not supposed to prejudge.
I'm just counting the years.
Okay, good.
Do you believe that the invasion of Kuwait in 1990 should be included, as well as his assassination attempt against former President Bush?
And that'll all be decided by the lawyers. And I will instruct.